The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Israel appears to have rejected international calls for an immediate ceasefire in Lebanon, and this is ahead of Netanyahu's address to the United Nations today. Sally Hayden is an Irish Times correspondent and author. She's in Beirut. Sally, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, Sally, will you describe the atmosphere in Beirut? Because there are people coming, obviously, from the south, from the hinterland, and migrating to Beirut for their own protection.
Yeah, sure. The atmosphere, it's hard to describe, to be honest. Like, I've been living here since January, and people have been on edge, particularly at certain times when it seemed like there might be an escalation. But at the same stage, I think when it actually happens, you know, it's so shocking. And you can see, like, the streets here are quite quiet. A lot of shops are closed. People from Beirut, some of them have moved to the mountains if they can afford it. Other people, like you said, are coming en masse to Beirut and looking for accommodation. The church down the road for me, for example, has been turned into a shelter. One of the priests in training there told me that the first person showed up on Monday night, basically just assuming that they could stay. And he said, of course you can stay. And now they've got more than 70 people was the last I heard. And he's now looking at turning it into a more kind of long-term shelter. Nobody knows how long this is going to last for, but it obviously doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. And so, yeah, people are just trying to figure out what to do. And yeah, it's difficult to make decisions with a level of uncertainty. And it's worth also reiterating, like, Beirut also isn't necessarily safe. Like, there have been 4 airstrikes in Dahiye, or 4 targeted, four attacks anyway, in Dahiye, which is a few kilometers from me, in the past week. And so people, even within Beirut, they're fleeing certain areas to go to others.
Now, is there adequate food supply available in Beirut, or is that becoming scarce?
Yeah, I mean, I think food for now is fine. I mean, it's really hard to say this because the issue is, like, Lebanon has been experiencing an economic crisis since 2019. I'm sure a lot of people know about it. And so if you have money, of course, you can access food still. But there's a lot of people who, you know, they fled without anything. They don't have money. There are people who were suffering anyway who don't have money. And at the same stage, there are a lot of initiatives to supply meals and things like that. So it's not that there isn't availability of food, but of course, you know, some people can get it more easily than others.
Even if you have money, it may be very hard to get out of Beirut. I mean, are all flights cancelled?
I don't know if all flights are cancelled. I mean, I even have friends who are journalists who have flown in the last day or two, which obviously shows the strange nature of journalism. But yeah, I think there are flights still leaving, but the likelihood, or it's likely anyway, that they will all stop. Certainly, I think the European airlines were much faster to cancel flights, whereas the Turkish ones and the Lebanese airline have continued.
Now, we know the Israelis are doing drills close to the border, and the threat of invasion is always there. Do people in the know in Beirut kind of figure there will be an invasion, or is this more saber rattling accompanied by bombing by Israel?
Yeah, I mean, Israel have obviously invaded before, and they seem to be saying that they are going to do a ground offensive. And we know they've called up reserves as well. So it's not exactly sure what that would look like and what it would mean, you know, how far they'd actually be willing to go. But it's certainly very possible.
Now, the message from Netanyahu is that the troops are to fight on to their utmost abilities. There is no sign of any thought of ceasefire at all. Looking at the politics of the situation, has Netanyahu found himself, compared to Gaza, a new war that might even make him popular?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's hard for me to comment on internal Israeli politics, but I can certainly tell you the feeling from here, which is that this is, you know, people have watched with horror what has happened in Gaza, and there's a big fear that there's a fear that the way that this is being spoken about, it's dehumanizing towards, you know, Arabs, towards Lebanese people, towards Palestinians, that there's overly a focus on what Israel wants or what Israel's trying to do, and not enough of a focus on the civilian toll, for example, of the consequences of what Israel is doing. And certainly here, there's a feeling that Israel has all the weapons, they have all the power, they have the backing of the US and other countries, and they can potentially do what they like. And at the same stage, like the scale, I mean, you know, the death toll now is so high already. It's more than 700 from what we know. The health minister, after the first day, which was the deadliest day, said that the majority of people killed were unarmed people inside their homes. We don't know for certain that everything they're targeting is a Hezbollah target, because there isn't the capacity to actually go and investigate what has been hit because of the scale of those attacks. And we know that a lot of civilians have died. I mean, even this morning at 3 a.m., another report came through. Reuters has said that 9 people were killed in a border town, including 4 children, a wife that was pregnant at the time. So as the mayor of the town said, the child in her stomach also died. And again, yeah, it's impossible to quantify the scale of what has happened and who is being impacted by it. But it's certainly massive.
Now, Sally, in the wake of what happened on October the 7th, there were people looking to see what the people of Gaza felt about Hamas, whose provocation brought down the wrath of Israel. But such is the just devastation that has been wreaked by Israel in the meantime, that those voices and the search for voices who might be critical of Hamas has really stopped, because no one is kind of pointing the finger at Hamas anymore. They're pointing the finger at the response of Israel. And at this early stage, perhaps in the Lebanese conflict, are people pointing the finger in any way at Hezbollah and saying, you guys, if you didn't, you know, keep throwing rockets at Israel, we wouldn't be having this problem?
Yeah, certainly. A lot of people are very angry at Hezbollah, and not just fear, not just anger at Hezbollah in terms of how they have acted, but also, like, I interviewed, for example, a man who I think it was on Tuesday, an airstrike hit about 20 meters from his property in the Bekaa Valley. And he said that he thinks that that was a place that Hezbollah were using as some sort of building shelter, something. He wasn't sure, but he said that he had no idea. So there's also mass fear that people don't actually know, you know, what might be a place that Hezbollah is using. You know, they don't necessarily know who's even in Hezbollah. And so, for example, like the Israelis saying, stay away from Hezbollah, it's not necessarily possible because they just don't know. So, there's a lot of fear because of that, and also anger at Hezbollah, and certainly anger at Israel.
Yeah, because Israel's intelligence seems to be very sophisticated and very deep, given the kind of targeting they've been doing of Hezbollah leaders. So it is possible that Israel knows more about some people's neighbours than they do themselves.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, it's been pretty extraordinary what, you know, a lot of the intelligence that they have. But at the same stage, it's also worth saying, you know, the way that the Israelis speak, it's like Hezbollah is this terrorist organization. I mean, Hezbollah has a militant group, but they're also a political party. You know, they also run hospitals and like healthcare centers and provide other kind of social assistance for people. And it's not, you know, it's a much greater kind of organization. And it does have support, by the way. Like, I'm not saying that everybody is against them, but people are angry, like I said. But it's not just this militant group. There are other aspects of it that are very enmeshed in society in different parts of this country. And so painting them just as a terrorist group that fire rockets, again, it's not really respecting that, or it's not understanding that.
It makes it very difficult for the ordinary Lebanese person. You know, the government that's there is a lame duck government anyway, with it doesn't appear to have any great popular support. So where is a Lebanese person to turn to for some sort of salvation from all of this?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that has really amazed me, and I don't know if hope is the right word, but given me some kind of, you know, happiness is seeing the volunteer efforts by like Lebanese civilians. And like I said, I visited this week a kitchen that was making at the time 1200 meals a day for displaced people. But I saw yesterday, I think they made 1700. And that's out of money raised on donations. These are volunteers who have just come together this week and said, we need to do something to help the displaced. And there are so many other efforts, you know, the Beirut Marathon, for example, volunteers with them have now turned to raising, you know, collecting things for displaced people. There's kind of like a big movement here to do what they can to help each other. And I think the Lebanese civilians, the people themselves, because they're so used to having to deal with such crisis, they kind of find ways to manage it and to help each other. And some will kind of say that's probably a bad thing because maybe it's meant that there hasn't been more of a reckoning in terms of the leadership. But I think it's very important to not forget that the people who are suffering in the middle of all of this are you know, the Lebanese citizens.
Finally, Sally, UNIFIL, the mission on which so many Irish people have served over the years. It was established in 1978 with the idea of patrolling the Lebanese-Israeli border. And they have said that this is the most difficult period in their history as a UNIFIL force. The Irish troops, I presume they just hunker down as these rockets fire over their heads?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been in touch with them myself, but my understanding, they're obviously facing logistical challenges if they did want to evacuate because the roads have been very dangerous and also very, you know, blocked, like gridlocked in certain cases. I think from what I said, a UNIFIL spokesperson spoke to Euronews and said that they don't necessarily think the mission should be removed. And obviously, you know, if they stay in place, they can do things like monitoring and you know, potentially could play a very important role from my understanding of what they do. But yeah, of course, that depends on the level of risk that they're willing to take.
Sally Hayden, Irish Times correspondent and author in Beirut at the moment. Sally, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.